What's up, everyone? It's Gavin or Tweak.
What's good? What's good? What's good? It's Marcus or Pink.
What up? It's Charles or Chuck.
What's going on, everyone? You got Matt or Haz. And just so you know, Marcus did laugh during the intro this week, but we had to run it back. So this week definitely doesn't count. Joining us today, we're very happy to have on friend of the show, spearheading the official rule change committee, basically. Dakpo, what's going on, man?
Hey, what's good, guys? Thanks for having me on.
Of course.
Thanks for coming through. A lot of exciting stuff. Actually, Dakpo joined us in our pre-podcast call, and we're all just talking about the direct. So I think, you know, even before we dive into any rule set stuff, I think this was a great direct because everyone I talked to about it had a different favorite part. I don't know if you guys all kind of fall into that. So I think maybe we just do it around the horn, starting with our great guest, Dakpo. Dakpo, what's your favorite part of the direct, man?
Well, I've been catching up on what happened, and there's a lot of weird and crazy stuff that's going on. Low key, I'm really excited for this Horizon Lego game. I love Horizon Zero Dawn. So
okay.
I haven't ever played a Lego game though, but like you got a good IP in there, something I like. I'm super down.
Oh yeah.
Everybody's like, "What? He didn't say like Zelda?"
See, that's what's awesome though. I haven't heard anyone say that yet. But that's really cool. Charles, what was your favorite part of the direct?
My favorite part was Pikmin 5 announcement. I'm super hyped for it.
That was hype.
Yeah, for sure. I'm gonna keep it a buck. I've been super busy. So I still need to catch up with the direct, but I'm about to find out my favorite part in this episode because I'm sure all of you will tell me everything about it.
I was looking around the circle and I was like, well, Charles is next. I'm like, but I know he didn't watch it. I was like, oh, well, I was like, that's his problem. He can deal with it. What about you, Marcus? What'd you like?
My winner of the direct is definitely that Zelda game. That game looked incredible.
It does.
But I feel like that's probably a lot of people's winner. It's usually that or the other game that got announced for people. I don't want to spoil it, but one of you might spoil it, but I don't want to spoil it. But that Zelda game was lit.
Go ahead, Gavin. Everyone set your watches.
I don't know what my favorite part was. I think my favorite part was also the Zelda game because it's made by Grezzo, who made the Link's Awakening Switch remake. And it's just a new 2D Zelda in general. And you play a Zelda, which is just a bonus to all of that. But the Mario and Luigi game is so crazy.
That was my second winner. I actually had like an order, but hold on. Let's let Haz go before I get into it. Like,
I was trying to hear what Termi had to say about the direct, but I have a feeling he's going to stop barking pretty soon, so you won't get to finish that thought. Come on, you already know
it's
what
not
it is.
The Marvel.
You know it. It's Marvel.
Crazy
on, man. Of
crazy
course,
purple.
Dude. It was crazy, and like, well, I was watching because Gavin was restreaming it, so they did like the Donkey Kong. By the way, like spoilers, I don't really like. If you follow this podcast, I feel like you've watched the direct. If you didn't watch the direct, you care about spoilers. You've already figured it out
it's
by now.
It's also been a day later.
A whole day, yeah.
You know what? Let me lock back in. You're right.
Yeah, I think we're good. So the Donkey Kong game got announced, and Gavin was obviously freaking. He's a big Donkey Kong guy. The Dragon Quest game got announced, and B was freaking out. I was like, all right, whole squad got one but me. I need one. Come on. And then it showed Ken doing Shoryu Repa to the Sentinel. I was like, all right, I got one. We're good. All right, that works. That's awesome.
8 seconds of Ken.
I was like, show me some Ken. Yeah, show me some Ken. I typed that in Gavin's chat, and then like 20 seconds later it happened. I was like, cool. All right, that worked out. But I am really excited because I always love those games, but I always only played them like super casually. So I'm happy to have that casual experience and then be able to like, I don't know, if I get bored on an airplane, if I have it downloaded on my Switch, I'll like try to lab some combos or beat the arcade mode. Like, I've just always really appreciated all those games. So, yeah, I'm really excited. And I hope it means something for the future of that franchise. It's probably like, that's like, you know, we're at like baby crawling and that's like, you know, leaps and bounds like on the moon. But that's what I'm hoping for. Like a Marvel 4, like a proper Marvel 4 with like real, not MVCI, like not how that, you know, came out and all
I'm
that.
I'm talking about
like
Infinite, man.
Yeah, you know what's crazy? I've been watching old Marvel VODs, and I got to the era where they're like, yeah, this is a dead, Marvel 3 is dead, like, we're all moving on to MVCI, like, in the commentary and stuff, like, oh, they're dropping these combos because he's been practicing Infinite, man, that game rules, and I'm like, yikes, like this did not age well. Like every tournament is so weird, like towards the end of Marvel's life cycle. So, but I'm very excited. I love that series very, very much. I'm excited to have it on the Switch on the go. So it's exciting. All right, Gavin, go ahead. Sorry.
I think the most important takeaway from it is that this is most likely the last major direct with focus on the Switch One. And it's just crazy to think like, damn, the Switch was pretty wild. Like, this is probably the craziest library I've ever seen on a video game console. And it's probably not even close. If you're including like the, you know, the ports along with the, like the new games, it's just the craziest console ever. And I don't think it's close. And even if you do only include like the Switch exclusive games, it's still like pretty fucking goated. Which it's, I don't know. I think it's important to appreciate it while it's still here, because it's gonna be overtaken by something new pretty soon. And I think the Switch gets a lot of stuff, gets a lot of shit, but I don't know, dude. Like, pretty crazy console. But yeah, the Mario and Luigi game looks amazing. It's who's making it, because Alpha Dream went bankrupt. So the interesting thing about this is they did three in a row with Mario RPG into Thousand Year Door into Mario and Luigi, which sounds so obvious now that it happened. But the Mario and Luigi thing was not expected because of Alpha Dream going bankrupt. And the weirdest part about it is it's a new game. It's not a remake like the other two games were. So they did the Triple Crown, and it's really confusing. I want to know who's making it. And then Donkey Kong was really exciting, but it was probably the least possible exciting DK thing, because it's another port. It's not a new game. So the 10-plus year streak of no new DK game continues. But now you'll be able to play all five Donkey Kong Country games on the Switch, which is really cool. I think that's always a big thing on the Switch, is taking like an IP and like just giving it the biggest library compared to like other consoles. It usually just has the most to offer. So maybe the Switch 2 will have some big DK game, like a big 3D DK game. That's my prediction. And and Metroid Prime 4 was finally revealed, or like some gameplay shown. 7 years since its initial announcement, the development changed for it at one point, like restarted, like new team and stuff or something like that. And it's just a good wrap up to the Switch, I would say. We know the holiday game, we know some early 2025 stuff, and we can probably expect the Switch 2 reveal to have its own like presentation sometime this year, and then get released officially like in the first half of 2025. So Nintendo went from having a really quiet 2024, their last direct was in September of 2023, to ramping up like really quickly out of nowhere, I would say. So
you said, I don't know if you want me to repeat that before, but you said with this direct officially out of the way, we are now officially on Smash Watch. Is that true? Or do we need to edit this out of the episode?
No, it's definitely true. I think what's super interesting about it is it's like, as a collective community, or just like Nintendo in general, it's like Smash speculation started at the same time for everyone, just about. YouTube videos start appearing, all the friend groups start chatting about like the future of Smash and the characters and the next game or whatever. And it's just so interesting how like Nintendo didn't do anything, yet as a collective Smash brain, we all just started preparing. It's like something just gets in the air and the speculation just starts. But yeah, we're definitely officially in the speculation period if we weren't already. And there's a bunch of reasons for that. Like, you know, there's just raw time, right? It's been 6 years. There's a console that's confirmed to exist. Sakurai just wrapped up the YouTube stuff. And, you know, new console means new Smash, because it's one of their biggest sellers, if not their biggest seller for raw hardware. So, yeah, I think the speculation period has officially begun. And in my opinion, it's the best part. Like, it's the most fun. So,
do you think they're working on a new Smash right this second?
Yes. Yeah.
It's pretty crazy. While we talk about new Smash and things on the horizon, obviously we still have the current game that we all know and love, Smash Ultimate. Be a good way to talk about what Dakpo's been cooking up, because if I remember correctly, Dakpo, you and the rule set team, what you've been working on, talks about both Smash Ultimate and anything that comes up in the future. Is there, am I off on that first off? And if not, can you expand upon that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So the process has been pretty interesting because we are at that like twilight phase of the game. We don't know how long the game has got before a new title is announced or something like that. And if Smash 4 was any indication, once they stop doing balance patches, like that's a huge like heads up that it's not that their teams just stopped and not do anything. They are working on another project, which is most likely the next Smash game. So it's, I'm on the same train of, I'm pretty sure that they're developing that. But in terms of like this unified rule set and what it means, it's kind of crazy. Like, dude, we're like almost 6 years into this. We didn't have like, we don't have a unified rule set. Like,
yeah,
it's a mess, man. And that's like, obviously like one of the biggest challenges of creating something like this is we're ripping off like this crazy band-aid that's been on for like 6 years, a lot of like mixed attempts on trying to make it work. But yeah, I think one, thank you guys for having me on. It's really cool to be able to talk about this. And two, I think it's really important to set the scene of like how the heck this happened and why it's happening in year six and all that stuff going down. So just a little background. This is something that I think a lot of people have been wanting to get done for a long time. It's just been like a logistical problem because a lot of the TOs that were trying to get this done, like, I'm gonna be real, like trying to gather like 20 TOs into a single call or type like any conversation like that, you just like, it's like herding cats. Like, obviously these people skill wise have incredible organization skills and like they're running majors and all that stuff. And I get it. It's difficult to get together because, you know, you could invest time in this or you could, you know, make your event better and spend a lot of time there. So it's just really hard to get online. And so I was happy to step in and just kind of start organizing things and getting calls on the books and kind of getting a criteria going. So I jumped in. Oh, dude, I think it was like around like last October, because organization and project management, like that's kind of stuff I do in my real day-to-day job anyways. So it was pretty affluent to me. And we basically started this process of where I jumped in the middle of it. We had meetings happening very, very sporadically. We kind of had like a criteria of how we would want to make a unified rule set. And then when I stepped on board, we wanted to, if we're going to present like a unified rule set or something, we don't want to just like say, hey, this is what we think feels right. This is a cool rule set. Like, we wanted to come, we wanted to have like data backing us up. We wanted to have input from players, TOs, from top players. We wanted to have input from everywhere, hard data, so we could present something that isn't just like, cool, this is how we feel. And so shout outs to Captain L. He's really pivotal in this. We put together a huge survey. Did you guys all take that Luminosity survey, by the way? The player data one? I'm curious.
I don't think I did, bro.
What, Gavin? That's your job.
I know I did. I didn't get a survey. What the heck?
It was tweeted out. So. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Fill it out, Charles?
What's up?
You fill it out, Charles?
I did not fill it out, no.
I didn't because either. I didn't know where it was.
Well, I was very busy, and then two, I would feel a little guilty because I compete in tournaments here and there for fun, but I'm not like an active player in the community. Right. So, I mean, I do have my opinions on the rule set, but I just didn't feel like I should take that survey unless I'm actively competing in tournaments. So that's how I felt about it.
I kind of feel the same way. And as a caster, I feel like it's one of my weakest points is just not knowing enough about the stages. So that's why I'm kind of happy. Well, A, that this data is getting gathered, and B, something is being done about it.
You know what? If it makes you feel, guys, if it makes y'all feel better, I also didn't take the survey since
nice,
since we were one of the ones working on it. Yeah, it would be a be a little missed. Conflict of my interest. Hand in the pie. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, Captain L put together a really, really extensive survey. And it was cool because it's not just like, do you think that Battlefield is a good competitive stage? Like, that's so shallow. Like, people would vote yes or no. It had a lot of really specific questions like this stage, blast zone from the ledge to the blast zone is like 160 units. Do you think this is fit for competitive play? An example of that would be like X stage. Okay, what if we shorten that blast zone distance to like 130 units or whatever, or whatever WarioWare is or something? Do you still feel like that is competitively viable like WarioWare? And so we would essentially get a lot of really cool data points of what specific aspects of stages should be legal in your opinion or should not be. We got like a really good threshold of what we wanted to use in our rule set, and we sent that player out. Luminosity tweeted it out and put it on all their platforms, and so that was a lot of fun. We have a lot of cool data, and we'll jump in. I don't know how exactly you want to organize this discussion about it, but once the survey came back, the basic plan was like, cool, we've got a lot of player data. We're going to try to get as many TOs, as many participants on this call to make like a suggested rule set using this data and using a careful hand of when like we needed to make a decision. There's no data to back it up. And then we basically made a suggested rule set with the data. And then we said, okay, cool. These 20 TOs that have been basically curated from like our top TOs for North America, we're going to put up a runoff vote, and here are all of your choices. So if like, I won't go into like the specifics of which rule sets were there, but if it was a prominent rule set in any way, it was on this ballot. And so we had all the TOs vote on, you know, which rule set that they would want to do for the unified rule set. And out of all the rule sets, the unified rule set was the one that came out on top. And so that is a very quick run through of like the entire process of gathering the data, gathering the TOs, getting the input, and then presenting it. And it's been a crazy, crazy ride, but we're nearly at the end of it. And hopefully, to answer your first question, hopefully this sets like some type of precedence or like at least process to what we can do for the next Smash game. Cause like, it'd be really awesome in the next Smash game if we have like seasonal stage lists and we're like trying out new things and, yes, you know, we're being adaptive. Cause this right now it's like, we know the meta, we know what each stage is doing. Let's just get this, let's establish a process. And then I think we'll be a lot more successful. Cause it's kind of weird. We have like a weird dynamic of each continent kind of just like, here's our thing. Yeah. And so that's where we are.
It's interesting because even just from the onset, like, you got to applaud what you guys are doing because, like you said, it's a Band-Aid that's been covering a wound that's been festering for however many years we've been a community, essentially. Like, this is something that it feels like this is something everyone asked for. And then when it's done, everyone gets mad about it. It's like, no, we want a unified rule set, but not like that. Like, no way. My rule set is way better than this. It's like, don't you guys see the problem here? Don't you see the issue with, like, everyone thinks that they know what the rule set should be or shouldn't be, and competitors like this a little bit more and TOs like this a little bit more. Did anything go into how you weighed each vote, or did everyone kind of just get an equal vote, like whether you're a TO or a player, or if you were like a top player, does that count for a little bit more, or is everyone just like kind of on equal footing?
Wait, so very, Deco, real quick, before you get into this, I just want to break down the parties involved, right? So let's break that down real quick, and then you can answer that question, Dakpo. So you got to, when you're thinking about these rule sets or just the tournament ecosystem, there's three groups of main people, right? So there's the players, there's the tournament organizers, and there's the viewers. Those are your three main groups. There's subgroups within that, right? Obviously, there's TOs that host bigger tournaments. There's players that are ranked higher. And the more you scale up within those groups, the more stake they have in the game. So I think for the panel's sake, we looked at everything and we were thinking like, okay, well, the TOs have the most financial stake in it, right? So that's the group of people that tend to have or should have more swing. I think, I mean, that's an opinion, obviously. But yeah, I just wanted to break down just the different groups that are involved in this and kind of, yeah, you need to view it as who has the most stakes. And when you think about stakes and what you can break it down in numbers, it's financial stake, right? So yeah, I just wanted to break down just the different groups involved.
I appreciate that too, Charles, because you said something important there that I don't think everyone might have considered, and is that the viewers should get a vote too. You know what I mean? Like, that's really interesting to me. And it kind of makes me think of, like, kind of like a tangential thing where, like, the All-Star game for, like, Major League Baseball, like, the viewers specifically vote them in, but, like, the players can do it and the owners. So it's like, it's, I think it's really important to consider that. Like, what are the viewers, what do they care about? What do they like? Because I think some competitors would be like, I don't care what viewers think of, you know? I don't care what they think of, but.
But hey, you have to, because they're part of the ecosystem, because viewership gets sponsors for the tier. Like, everything links into each other. But I will say that I think they're, like, if we just had every vote per party, some parties should have more pool than the others, right? So I do think viewers are on the bottom of viewers are on the bottom of that totem pole, in my opinion.
Not in my heart, though. They're at the top. Well,
they still should have a say, but not as it's like who has more stakes? Because players are financially more committed than viewers because they're paying for the hotel, they're paying for the flight, they're being there in person, right? So the way I view it is it should be structured in who has more stakes. So
that
I think that's how it was.
Well, just raw numbers. Like if there's 20 TOs and there's 100,000 viewers, like you got to kind of balance it out somewhere, right? Correct. Especially because of the people working on it. And then players probably fall somewhere in the middle. But sorry, go ahead, Dakpo. I think we got
no, it's track good. I think it's like really important discussion too, because I think there's another aspect I would want to talk about with the viewers is that viewers generally funnel into players. Like that's where a lot of our players come from, is people who see this, are exposed to this online, exposed to their favorite top player streaming or whatever, and then they start giving the game a shot and they get into the scene. Like, I don't think it can be understated what that Melee doc did for the Melee scene. And those are viewers. Those are people consuming content online. Massive flood of players, right? And when the next Smash game comes out, I really, really highly recommend that we don't completely alienate the viewers in that sense too, because that's going to be where a lot of our scene comes from. And those viewers will come players will come top players, and then if they live long enough, they'll become TOs or commentators or somewhere in that pipeline.
That's awesome.
But going back to originally what you said is, like, you know, how did we weigh that, which is such an important question, because I think everybody wants to know, it's like, okay, who were like the actual key decision makers here. And Charles, maybe you can back me up on some of the details here as I try to recall them. So Luminosity kind of like curated 20 TOs, top TOs for North America. So they would say, like, okay, for like Genesis, we're not going to have all of the reps of all the TOs who, you know, TO Genesis. We're going to have Genesis and that region represented by one person. And they did that for a bunch of different major tournaments around North America. And then that's how we got our 20 TOs that came to the vote on this unified rule set. Is that how you remember it too?
Yeah, it was something along the lines of, if you hosted an A tier tournament, I believe it was A, it could have been A or B. I don't know the exact tier, but it was X tier or higher. You could qualify to be part of the panel that would do the voting. And LumiRank went ahead and gathered a bunch of individuals. I was part of that gathering process in the beginning, but for me, life just got really busy, so I kind of exited out. But I was part of it in the beginning, and it was mainly Dakpo and Captain L that didn't necessarily have, you guys didn't vote, right? But you guys gathered the information, which is a huge, huge part of it. The data collection is crazy. And I think that's what makes this rule set. Whether you like it or not, it is data driven. So if you don't like it, hold the L, it's data driven. And that, I think that's where rule sets in general get a little rocky, because it's like, oh, well, this top player thinks this, but this player thinks this, but this guy's a top player, so is the opinion way more, but the TO doesn't want people, yada, yada, right? So when you just have it data driven, it's, you're making something that's so great a little bit more black and white, at least. It's still a gray area, obviously, but yeah.
And I'm sure you guys have said this a million times, but there's never going to be a rule set that pleases everyone. Like, it's just never, ever going to happen.
No shot, dude. You could run like a, just like a PS2 only rule set, and like, you know, you, for all the PS2 lovers, there'd be like four more haters, like out of nowhere. You'd never expect it. You'd be like, all right, well, can't win. But yeah, we had the 20 TOs vote on it. and it was a runoff vote system. So basically, like, we didn't stop the vote until, like, there was a very clear winner. So that was a lot of fun. Again, just to kind of back up what Charles said, is I did not participate in the vote. Captain L didn't participate in the vote. We were there just to gather information, present it in an easy, digestible format, and then, like, the teams make an informed decision. And that's where we got our unified rule set from. And it would be really cool because there's a lot of data that, man, people are not ready to hear, but it's there.
Like, what? What's your number one in that, like, okay, data point, in that, or one, yeah, or two?
But, well, after this, we should definitely get into the rule set, because I definitely want to hear your opinions on the rule set. So, yeah, what are some of the more interesting data points, Dakpo?
Sure. So, some of the more interesting data points, and I'll get more interesting as we go. I would say people are so down for close blast zones compared to, like, far away blast zones. So, like, things like with short sides, like town and city.
Town, yeah.
They're much more interested in something like that. And even to a point of where they were more interested in something like WarioWare than something with, like, huge side blast zones like Dreamland and stuff like that. Which, that was a big surprise to me, because I thought people like space. Nah, people want to see blood. People want to see Incineroar on that victory screen and all that good stuff. So that was, like, one of the first things that was, like, really interesting to me.
Because the first thing I thought of when it comes to stage is how much stage actually is there. Like, how long is the stage? Is, like, maybe the first thing I think of when I think of watching or playing Smash. And then the blast zones might be the secondary thing after that, probably. I need to think of, and the platforms, obviously. I don't know.
It's the first thing.
I'm in the same camp.
Really?
It's the platform layout for me. Yeah.
Really? Platform layout? Mine's stage size 100% is always what I think of first.
Yeah. So for me personally, and I'll have to make sure that I keep a separation between what my stage philosophies are and, like, what the data and, like, the unified rule set are, because they're not the exact same thing. Like, if I had my way with the rule set, like, it wouldn't look exactly like this. But I really, really feel like the platform layouts and the platform numbers is a huge, huge part of, like, picking a stage for me, how that affects neutral, how that affects advantage, disadvantage. I would say stage length is right under that, though.
Yeah.
The stat that I was about to go into it, which something that I'm not surprised about at all, but a lot of people are, is that, like, out of all of the stages that are on that rule set, Pokemon Stadium 2 had the lowest approval rating for competitive play out of any of them. It was, like, right at our threshold of, like, 75%. Yeah. Like, there was, like, huge gaps between some of the other stages. So just for reference, 160 units is, like, the magic number. Like, that's if you're trying to, like, learn stage stats as a commentator or something like that, like, 160 is, like, the magic number. Like, Battlefield, 160 units in length. Northern, Small Battlefield, Final Destination, Kalos, Lylat, just about, like, almost all of our, like, main stages are 160 units. And it's even true from, like, the blast zone, from, like, the lip of the stage to the blast zone, that's also, like, usually 160 units. So it's, I don't know, like, the devs were just like, yeah, 160 units, that's our guy. Pokemon Stadium 2 is, like, 187, almost 188. That is a huge variance. In fact, like, out of all the stages that are legal, it's the biggest deviation of a stat across the board. It is the highest difference from what our normal stages look like. And I think in that survey, when we pointed that out, is like, here's 160 unit. How do you feel about that approval? Cool. 165 is town, which is longer, but it's not too much longer. And then you go 187, and then people were like, ooh, I don't know about that. And so we saw, like, a higher disapproval rating, which is kind of, like, a weird way to spin it. It still was, like, heavily approved. It still met that 75%. But for sure, there was definitely a big difference between Pokemon Stadium 2, which, spoilers, is one of the main reasons why we picked Small Battlefield over PS2 as a starter. Because, one, the platform layouts, we wanted all unique platform layouts as starters. And then, two, for the duplicate platform layouts, we wanted to put the more normalized ones, the more unified ones as the starters, and the more deviant ones as counterpicks. So just using that kind of rule set and logic is kind of gives you like insight of how something like this was created. A lot of people are like, ah, oh, no, I'm a PS2 fan until I die. And that's fine. Cause like, we're honestly, it's like a whole culture thing. The game came out. We didn't have a bi-platform stage. It was the first time we could play on like Pokemon Stadium 2 without it transforming, which was huge. We didn't have small Battlefield. And so everybody locked in was like, oh dude, this is so sick. Oh, we finally got Frozen Stadium. And then like, I think we talked about it, it was like COVID happened. And then like 2 years after the game comes out, COVID happens. And then they drop Small Battlefield, which is just like the, I don't want to say unified, it's like normalized 160 unit version of a biplat stage, which is really weird. I'm not going to lie. I have no idea why Nintendo came in and was like,
yeah,
here you go. Here's a biplat stage out of nowhere. I was like,
they just had nothing to say. It just happened like
overnight. Like, was that the Min update? Is that when that was?
It was its own thing entirely. And it was a surprise.
I remember being so happy about it though, because I have to, like, the only thing I could think of, and maybe I'm like tunnel visioning or thinking, making too big of a deal of our scene. They must have seen how many games were being played on PS2. And it's like, dude, if you have a small Battlefield, you can pick literally any stage and make it be that way instead of it being the same mundane thing. And it makes the stage smaller and more normalized, which, I mean, that's, I always think of them as like a duo or a trio where it's like Battlefield FD and now Small Battlefield. So it seems like they kind of just wanted to slot something in there to fill the gap. It's like, here's your standard conventional stage with no platform. Here's your standard conventional stage with three platforms. And here's your last one that has two. And now they're like a trio kind of. Now they need one with one. Like a Smashville that's standardized or something like that. That'd be kind of cool.
That is really Hollow Bastion. Hollow Bastion is standardized. Hollow Bastion's 160 units. That's what I'm talking about. The magic number is there. we need like an inverted, like a maybe like a Lylat type of platform layout that's like universalized and not no slants. That'd be really interesting in the mix too.
Cool. Yeah, I like that because you see that from like Rivals and other platform fighters now. Like they're pretty creative with like, okay, here's what everyone wants for a stage. It's stationary. It's the same. It's consistent, right? In its layout, usually is what we want. Obviously, some exceptions go into there, but it's like here's a triplat, but they go down or left or right or make whatever. It's really cool to see how it's kind of evolved over time because you think about it, in 64, you couldn't even play on just a like there was no FD, like that wasn't even a thing. So it's really changed a lot. Yeah.
One thing I really want to highlight is the way Dakpo and Captain L gathered the data as well. I think the backlash on Twitter about PS2 is individuals that don't know about all these different units and all these different sizes, right? But Captain L and Dakpo did an incredible job of when they put out the poll, they're like, hey, this is a stage with this many units, but this stage is this many units. So when you present the data correctly, and they're not trying to influence anything, they're just giving you the data, right? Then all of a sudden we see a see, since the data is presented correctly in the poll, you saw the amount of people that wanted PS2 go down because they're like, wow, I had no idea PS2 was that big of a stage, right? So presenting the data while doing the poll is so important, and it also reflects that maybe people on Twitter don't understand or know all the data. Maybe that's why they're backlashing.
That can't be right. Stuff. People on Twitter don't know. And they're just saying their opinion. Hey, Charles, come on. Let's be real for a second. That can't be right.
Yeah, because I think PS2 was probably the biggest debate or the biggest backlash, if I'm not mistaken.
It must have been.
So
PS2 FD.
I just really want to highlight the fact that when Dakpo and Captain L did this poll, they're informing everyone that's making the vote. So at least you know that everyone making the vote is somewhat informed of what's going on too.
Yeah, right, I appreciate that call out. I really wanted to make sure that we avoided any like aha gotcha moments. Like that's not what this is about, you know.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I think the main reason for Small Battlefield's existence was just to balance out Elite Smash. Because the difference like there's a big gap between Battlefield and FD for like what they provide. So I don't think it had anything to do with competitive, but I do think it just made Elite Smash a little bit more well-rounded with like having an extra option and, you know, FD, then Small Battlefield has two platforms, then Battlefield has three platforms. It's like, you know, it's a good enough variety for them, and they also added the whole function where you can, between Battlefield and Small Battlefield, any Smash song can play. So it was just some random thing after the fact that just balanced it out a bit. Yeah, I guess my big thing for a competitive rule set, like, I'm pretty harsh on this, but I truly believe that, you know, something like a ranking system or anything like that isn't legitimate until the rule set is unified. Like, it's hard to consider Smash fully competitive unless we're all playing the same game every time. So basically this entire time, like, you know, we're all playing our hearts out. We want to win. Like, there's like money involved and stuff. But in terms of, like, you know, who is the best player in the world and everything like that, until we're all playing under the same rule set for an entire ranking, it's just not 100% legitimate. And I'm more on the harsher side, where I'm just like, it's not legitimate at all. So something like this, I think, is really important. And if, as a viewer or player or whatever, you want it to be as competitive as possible, and I'm sure a lot of people do want that, because, you know, it's what we're doing in the first place. So
it's got to be like one of the, it should be the easiest question to answer, but it's also really hard. If someone's like, okay, I want to get in competitive Smash, how do you guys play that? And it's like, oh, well, there's like, you know, a timer and stages. It's like, oh, what stages? It's like, are you playing in Italy? Are you playing in Texas? Like, where are you going? You know, like, it's all kind of different. Is there any inspiration that y'all took, Dakpo, from like non-esports? Like, I know tennis obviously has different types of courts that they play on. Or did you, or like even baseball, every stadium's a little bit different, right? But that's allowed. Did you guys look for any inspiration in that way at all? Or kind of are we doing our own thing here?
Kind of something adjacent to that, which I'm really glad that you brought that up too, where you want to make sure that your rule set's accessible, right? Accessible to new players, accessible to vet. It makes sense, because those conversations really do happen. Like low-key shout out, if you guys aren't on the competitive Smash Facebook page, which is hilarious, absolute hilarious. It's where I get like 90% of comedy in my life. You'll see those questions like pop up from people who don't know or not competitive, because like no one in that group's really competitive, but they're like, you know, what's the rule set? Like, I really need like Pichu to have this like final smash to keep up with all these armored characters and stuff like that. And you'll see people have no clue what's going on, and the thread is just full of hundreds of different rule sets, and it's hard and it's not accessible for somebody to like practice and really get a good game sense. So to answer your question, yeah, that's something that like we considered, especially with something like the graphic and the rules and how we present the rule set, is we want it to make it accessible, easy to read. And so it's not somebody like reading like four pages of rule sets, which tends to happen even in other Smash games too.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, you even talked with Nintendo. Oh, go ahead, Ping.
Quick question. So, like, we have the rule set now. Where do we go from here? Like, are you going to run this rule set until the next game, now that we're pretty sure there's going to be one in, like, the next 2 years or so? Are you going to try to adjust it based, like, each season based on the data that you've collected? And how does gentlemaning affect that? Because I'm pretty sure a ton of people are still just going to gentleman to PS2. So I'm just curious, like, if that's going to play a factor at all.
Well, I'll be completely transparent. It is hard to gauge, like, a timeline of making, like, seasonal adjustments and stuff like that when we don't even know if people will take the unified rule set seriously. Like, obviously, it's already going to be featured as something like Supernova and Cirque and any tourney locator events that are happening and Wave Dash. And, like, people are already playing it. But, like, it turns to be a thing, like, if nobody wants to run it, they just want to run their local rule set anyways, and they all kind of just do their own thing, it doesn't really go anywhere. So it really, that first part really hinges on the community getting together and be like, cool, this rule set's data driven, our TOs voted on it, we should run this, or, you know, give it at least our best shot, give it a try. And from there, once it establishes itself as a unified rule set and we see more TOs running it, because I know right now there's a lot of TOs that are super down to run it, they're just waiting to see how Supernova goes. And like Supernova will most likely happen and people will be like, eh, whatever. We went to PS2 right. or we started a small Battlefield. And then that's when you'll start to see, cool, now we're announcing it for this tournament and it becomes a regular thing. So in that timeline of where it becomes a thing and people start using it, I personally don't know how reasonable it would be to like start doing like seasonal changes for Smash Ultimate 6 years into the metagame. I don't know how much more data we actually need to collect because we can already see like stage usage and all of that stuff. It's, I can't imagine we get too much information. I feel like it'd be way, way more pertinent to like prepare for the next Smash game and be, you know, more proactive and seasonal changes with something like that. And that's what I'm really hoping for. We'll see what happens because, again, I pretty much stepped into this project because I really wanted to see it get done. I wanted to see a unified rule set for my community. So hopefully I can jump back in and at least assist or help organize for the next game. But as of now, there's no plans for like a seasonal change for this game because we don't even have any data for this current rule set. Like our first majors running it are coming up. And it would be really kind of disingenuous to like already be ready to make changes when we haven't seen it work the first time, right?
Yeah, I think now is such a good time to do it too. I feel like we have some, it's like a quieter time before Supernova. Like I think that's like the next tournament most people are looking forward to. So if you're a regional or local TO, I feel like this is a great time to help everyone. Even if it doesn't work out, right? Like let's say, yeah, the data says one thing, but we're humans and we all feel a completely different way than what the data says anyway, right? As is human nature sometimes. So, okay, great. At least we have more data to work off of and we tried something and we could see how that works for the future. I like how you guys are future facing and you kind of answer. I wrote down two questions that are future facing, Dakpo. And the first one you answered a little bit, but we are going to have a new game with new stages or new stage changes or like rules, right? Like Omega stages, right? Or stages without hazards. Maybe that'll be easier to toggle in the future or something like that. Without getting too granular, how do you anticipate really rotating and testing out stages and getting them ready? Like in the next game, right? We'll probably start with something simple would be, I don't know, just knee-jerk shooting from the hip here. It's like, we start with what we know. FD, Battlefield, small Battlefield. Maybe we just have three stages. Maybe Smashville, whatever. Like, or one Battlefield or whatever it's called. Super small Battlefield, extra small Battlefield. And it's one platform. I don't know. And maybe we start super simple and then grow it from there. Or do you guys have thoughts on that already? Or are you just kind of trying to get through this current season of Ultimate?
So, two things about that. One, Marcus, not to leave you hanging on the whole gentlemaning thing. That is totally fine. We put gentlemen in as a rule set just so people could go to whatever stage, as long as it doesn't extend the set. I don't think it affects our data too much. It's interesting because we already have rule sets that have small Battlefield and PS2 as starters, if that's kind of where you're leading that conversation. And we're already starting to see that small Battlefield's being picked more, even in that. I think I mentioned this before, but even at the like the last Delta in Japan, small Battlefield was started on more than PS2, which is interesting. And it's not a huge sample size. And it's also not America, but like gentlemaning will be there for those who really want to start on Pokemon Stadium 2 or really want to start on Kalos for whatever reason. Wii Fit mains, Falcon mains. I know y'all are out there. so, I mean, it's either way, it's there. And I think it's a really good rule set because, or not a rule set, but I think gentleman is a really good rule just because, you know, it doesn't really hinder too much as long as it doesn't extend the set in any type of way. Sorry if that didn't answer exactly what you're getting at. And to talk about like pivoting to a new game and like getting that kind of data and creating a rule set there, I generally find that when a new Smash game comes out, the rule sets are way more experimental. Like you guys, oh. Like there was, I mean, I could go for days on about the crazy stages in Brawl, but like even just like Smash 4, Duck Hunt was legal, like crazy. We played with Duck Hunt? That was insane.
For a while.
Yeah. Well, even it's like there's the hazards on, hazards off thing too. So it's like these five stages with hazards on are legal, but these seven stages with hazards off are legal. And then however picking and banning works for all that. And then people forget to toggle that the hazards are off, and then that causes a huge delay in bracket. And it's just like, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so what I expect to happen is the next Smash game comes out and we have a bunch of people being really aggressive, trying a bunch of wild stages, or like, see, man, if we would have had Rainbow Cruise, Steve never would have been a problem. Like, yes, that mentality. Charles. You know what? Shout outs to Coney. Coney's probably going to come out here with the craziest stage list. I love that guy. But I think for me, if I wanted to see a unified rule set really take off, what it's going to take is, one, presenting a little bit more conservative of a rule set to initially go, kind of like what you're saying. I don't think it'll work out like that way, but I would love to like open up with like a more conservative rule set and do it with Japan and Europe together. Like, start off as a unified front. And then from there, maybe have some seasonal discussions about maybe there is a season where we try like North Cavern, where it's like there might be visual issues, but like stat wise, it makes sense to run the stage and it's kind of got a unique platform layout with no walls and it's got like these upsides and we'll try like that. I would love for that to happen. I'll be frank with you. I don't know if Japan and Europe are willing to work with us like that. I know that I personally tried to reach out to the Japanese TOs like Umeki and stuff, and I just kind of got stonewalled there. I didn't get any responses back, so it was kind of tough. The Europeans were awesome though. They chimed in. They were in like some of the discussions about making the unified rule set, and they're like, hey, this is how it works in Europe. We tried this stage and this is how it went. So that was really, really cool. So I would love to get everybody on board and maybe start with a more conservative list, but I know we'll see some really crazy stages when the game comes out. I can expect that much.
Absolutely. And I think, sorry, my second, I had two future facing questions for you, if you remember. I had one, which you just answered very well. And then the second one is, do you anticipate, or would it be one of the goals of the committee to expand to other rules like character bans or the timer or whatever else might pop up? Final Smash Meter, right, has been a popular topic of discussion recently. Is that something that the committee would look to handle, or are you just strictly talking stage list for now and who knows what happens in the future?
Oh, you mean character bans like Steve?
Get Steve out of here. Yeah, there you go. Let's just call it what it is. Get Jim out of here. Come on, Dakpo, help us out.
Well, something interesting about that. Well, one, I'll say for the record that I don't think that's really in the scope of what this committee was trying to do. I don't think it was ever in the conversation. And two, I think Nintendo made it very clear that they want all of their characters legal. I know they came out to like a European license event and like said, no, Steve needs to be legal. And then all of the Steve ban chat just silence from there, which kind of makes me feel like they're setting up a precedence like that. They will tell you when they don't want like a rule like that implemented. So that kind of worries me. I'll just leave it at that. Nintendo will do what they need to do, however they wish. And they made it pretty clear that they want all their characters legal, unless they stop doing balance patches and a big rift happens up. I'm pretty sure we will be just kind of following whatever Nintendo says, which a small segue on that, I think Charles was trying to bring up earlier, is that we actually got approval for this stage list from Nintendo. This wasn't just we made it. We actually went to Nintendo, and there is, if you guys don't know, there's like awesome music on Hollow Bastion, but a lot of it's like copyright. So a lot of tournament organizers would play on the stage on stream, and they would have to like have their production team like mute the audio. And there's like a bunch of victory themes that are like that too, because there's copyrights and all this stuff. But the crazy thing, this game has been out so long that those copyrights are starting to fall off. And so we got confirmation from Nintendo, like the Hollow Bastion stuff is clear. It's good. We can actually use the Hollow Bastion music, which is sick because the stage is awesome. The stage has got the 160 units. It's great for competitive play. And so, yeah, they were like, cool. Yeah, all these stages are good. All the copyright's good here. Good luck with your rule set. We hope it works out. And I was like, sick. That's awesome.
So that's awesome. First off, that's really cool that you were able to have conversation back and forth with them and show them and get them interested. And that's really cool. And it's a W for the team for sure. My question is, what does it really mean? So it's like, we have this unified rule set, Nintendo approved of it. Now what, you know, like what's the thing after that? So like if TOs don't follow that, are they like, are there repercussions of not following the, like, what does it mean, Dakpo? Bigger picture.
It's the two timelines. It's one, if the timeline works, where the unified rule set gets picked up, people go, okay, fine, we'll roll with it. And it starts seeing itself in majors everywhere. Then we have a precedence of having that unified rule set carry that process into the next game, to where we have a much better shot of getting a unified rule set much earlier on. Timeline 2, it doesn't take off. It doesn't work. People are like, yeah, I'm sorry, I'm just not about it. And nobody runs it. I'm going to be real. Like, that's fine. I did everything that I could to, you know, make something like that happen. And if it's not meant to be, then, you know, I pass the torch on to whoever wants to try to pick it up next. I'm down to try to help with the unified rule set, even if this one doesn't work into the next Smash game. But I really do think this is kind of a pivotal moment of, like, can we come together? Like, can we put a process like this together? So I'm really hoping it's not Timeline 2, but if it is, then that's just something we're going to have to eat. And if the demand is there for it in the next Smash game, then, I mean, I'm happy to help.
I think you guys have a good perspective about it, or at least what you've been telling us today, Dakpo, is like, you know, again, no stage list is ever going to be perfect, but you guys are putting in the work and the effort and being able to show and point to not just feeling and raw human emotion of like, we've been on PS2 for 6 years. There's nothing wrong with it. Like, let's never change it. You know, that's like a strong feeling that some people legitimately have versus, well, let's look at the data and see what people really prefer across several different strong communities within the community, viewers, TOs, and players, and anyone else who has a stakehold in there. It's really interesting to see how it shook out. Gavin, do you have any other thoughts on the stage list so far, or anything that we've talked about today? I know people definitely want to hear what you think about, you know, rule sets and stuff like that. I know you said a little bit, but definitely want to give you some runway to, I think your opinion on this podcast is important.
Yeah, something that's important to me, like, despite like how much experience and knowledge I have on Smash, it always feels strange if I ever feel like I have too much of a hand in like how the game is played competitively or like the rules. So like when it came down to like when the Steve ban conversation was really, really popular and we were talking about it a few times on the show and a lot of people were looking for my input, it felt so strange to me. And I even talked about it a lot privately with B and stuff like that. And, you know, I just really didn't want it to be up to me just because, you know, it just made me think like imagine, I mean, maybe it does happen, I have no idea, but imagine if like, you know, an NBA whistle happens and the players just influence the call like mid game, or if the players change the rules in between seasons, like,
Bad news for you in this NBA, Gavin. Nothing happening.
So it's just like, I don't think the players should have too much of a say of what characters should be allowed or not, or what stages should be played. I think if you want to get more, you know, specific with some data on like, you know, how neutral is this stage? Should this stage be a neutral or starter or stage or a counter pick? It's like maybe, but even then it's just, it feels like the players should focus on playing for the most part. And if someone comes to them for the data, I guess that's fine. But I don't think they should have a big hand in any of that stuff. But yeah, for me, like, just looking at the rule set, like, I ask my gut, like, when you're playing on this stage, how does it feel? Like, does this stage feel like a starter or a counter pick, or should it not be allowed at all? And there's some small variance there. And I think the most neutral stages in the game are Small Battlefield and Hollow Bastion.
Agreed.
Everything Dakpo said, 100%.
And I won't elaborate. It is literally, it is just my gut. Like, PS2, it feels pretty much like a starter, but there's another one, and it has more variance in Small Battlefield, so I get it. And there is the occasional like good player I play with that will ask the want to start PS2 question but replace it with Small Battlefield. Like, that does happen, so it's not everyone always asking for PS2. Some people are just straight up cutting to the chase and be like, you want to start Small Battlefield. But yeah, from there it gets weird. Like Smashville just feels a little strange. but it's not like there's a third option. It's either a starter or a counter pick. So like you kind of just have to pick one. Like, since we're all talking about it, I was just thinking, like, what stages feel like starters and what don't. And I guess the platform layout and how many other stages have it or have something similar is important, especially if you're having a hard time deciding between starter or counter pick. Because, you know, for me with Smashville, I'm like leaning more towards it feels like a counter pick type of stage because it feels like such a potentially polarizing one. But if no other stage is doing it, then it's like, it's hard to say. Sorry, I can't even. Was Smashville a starter or a counter pick on this rule?
It's a counter pick. It's a small stage. Okay,
that makes sense then. And like something like Battlefield 2 for me is
Dakpo needs that sign off. He's got all the data, but he knows. You need like, that player sign off, or it doesn't mean anything.
Like Battlefield feels like it could be either way, but since it's the only stage in the rule set doing it, it's like, you know, you might as well put it as a starter. And surprisingly, looking into it, Town and City feels the most neutral, like right after Small and Hollow. I'm kind of surprised that I think that, but now that I'm actually looking at all of it, Town and City might be third after a tie between Small and Hollow, or maybe I'd put Small 1, Hollow 2. But yeah, I think I would do from like the most neutral to the least neutral, not even starter to counter pick. I'd say Small and Hollow are pretty damn neutral, and then PS2 somewhere in there, but it, you know, it already kind of exists with Small, then Town, then Battlefield, then
Town over Battlefield's crazy to me, just as a sidebar.
Cal's FD in Smashville, it gets a little weird, but yeah, it just got me thinking in a way that I hadn't really thought before.
I have a question for you guys. I'm really curious.
Sure.
Do you guys feel like there should be a difference in a stage list between starters and counter picks, or should it just be one roster? Just your stage. Kind of like how Europe does it.
You mean like if a stage is a starter, it can also be a counter pick and then excluding it?
So I'll phrase it like this. No, how would you feel? Yeah, how would you feel instead of having a starter and counter pick list if it was just a full stage list and you did all your strikings and bans with this full list available at all times?
Low key, isn't it like how it is now? It just doesn't feel that way. Because, like, realistically, people are going to look at FD or they're going to look at Kalos or, like, they're really like, what's the word I'm looking for? Those, like, out there stages.
Polarizing.
Yeah, they're like more polarizing stages. And they're just going to strike them anyway. Like, people aren't usually starting on Kalos, they aren't usually starting on those other stages. So it usually just ends up coming down to like a small Battlefield, a PS2 or something like that. You know what I mean? So like, I don't personally look at it in my head as starters and counter picks. So to me, it's just one giant list. And then, but I know maybe some people see it otherwise, but that's always how it's been for me. Cause I'm just like, bro, like if we add these, you're just going to get rid of them anyway. And then the next game, all the stages are available. So it's like, okay, sure, for one game all the stages weren't available, but if it's a best of five set, then if it goes to game five, then for four games all of them were.
Real quick, Chris, could you mind just putting up the stage list? I just thought our audio only listeners, real quick, just want to help them out. So the DACPO's rule set, the committee's rule set, starters are Battlefield, FD, Town and City, Small Battlefield, and Hollow Bastion. Then the counter picks are PS2, Smashville, and Kalos. We probably should have done that earlier for our audio only guys. Sorry. I do have a question too before we go off on the one rule set or not. Were they ordered in any specific way or not, DACPO, on that list? It wasn't alphabetical, was it? No, they were just on. Okay, I was just curious.
Nope.
Cool. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
I don't know how to answer that like at all. I feel I'm not qualified at all. Like I don't know if I know the difference between if it was all starters or not. Like I see what Marcus is saying, but
he's saying the most polarized stages are gonna get banned naturally anyway. Yeah. So why not just have them all on one list? Which logically makes sense to me.
For like, for all starters. Okay. The one thing I could think of is a newer player might get scammed a little easier.
That's true.
You've been going to Yu-Gi-Oh tournaments too much, man. If that's what you're thinking of.
Like, you're doing the striking process and, like, some crazy stage for your character gets left open. There's a lot more options. Like, the striking is a bit more in-depth. And then all of a sudden, a Kazuya player is playing against, like, a relatively new player on, you know, FD and Kalos and all that. Like, so I don't know. That's the only thing I could think of. Realistically, I don't know the difference. If I were to play with Marcus right now and we like played with that unified rule set, yet they were all available at all times, I don't know if the set would be really different compared to if it was starters and counterpicks. I don't know. I'm not as big of a stage guy. I do this stuff by feel when I'm in tournaments.
Yeah.
Jacko actually knows this, which is funny.
It almost feels like counterpicks, like, and it was such an extreme example of it because they must have first come around in Melee because 64 really only had the one stage, as far as I know, for competitive for the most part.
Eventually.
Melee. So Melee and I guess 64 early on. But Melee, it's like the counterpicks were insane. It was like, okay, you can start on Battlefield or Rainbow Cruise. You know what? Like, it was just like way. And so I think that was the logic built into it. It seems smart, but. Is it kind of a relic of the past? Is that what you're getting at, Dakpo? That's how I'm kind of feeling right now.
Well, I think it's more of a forward-looking question for me because we did have some questions about that in the survey. We had like two questions about it, actually. One, a very direct question of, do you like having starters versus counterpicks? And that was one of the most like lopsided polls ever. It was like 80% said yes, 20% said no. So that was a very, very easy sign. But then when we asked a more specific question, like how big of an advantage should somebody have as their counterpick? And like specifically talking about stage, like how extreme of a counterpick stage should be legal, right? Are we drawing the line at like Rainbow Cruise? Are we drawing the line at Final Destination? Are we drawing the line at Small Battlefield? Like we just want... just neutral on Small Battlefield, like that's where we draw the line. And that one, that question was way, way more split. People didn't really have like formative ideas and they weren't really sure of like what they wanted. It was really, really, really split on that second question. But the first one with people wanting counterpicks versus starters was very, very clear. And I feel like that is a very American culture. And it's just something that we've just done for like 20 years.
Yeah.
And so it's very interesting. And Europe's showing it being done as just one full stage list. And so when the next game comes out, I'd be interested to at least broach that conversation. It might be worth having at least.
Okay. I'm kind of down to do a, like a hypothetical stage strike with someone both ways and see where we end up. I'm just really curious.
Spoilers. You're going to need a ninth stage. You can't do stage striking with an even amount of stages.
Oh, dang it. There's only eight. True.
Yeah, yeah. So you could make a cut somewhere, or you could add another stage.
What if you do 1-2, 1-1, back and forth until you end up on the stage? You see what I'm saying?
Then some person's going to get an extra ban. And so, like, we never want to create a rule set like that, because that would mean, like, you literally sit down, you play RPS, and because you lost the RPS, your opponent gets an extra ban. Like, they get literal.
Nah, sounds like some TCG shit.
Advantage.
Yeah,
I
lost the dice roll? I lose game one? No.
Yeah, so we have to be really careful about that. In my, like, one of my, like, two, like, dream rule sets, one is, like, a really conservative, like, five-stage list one, and another one's, like, a nine-stage list one. So that could be, something like that could be possible. Sorry to burst your bubble there.
Dude, I'm so excited. Like,
I have a question for you, Dakpo. It's kind of more, like, broader theory about counterpicking and how, quote-unquote, how it should work. Is the idea that in a best-of-five set, let's say, like, for example, I'm playing against Gavin and obviously I win game one. Is the theory set idea after that he should win game two, then I should win game three, then he should win game four, then I should win game five? So it's kind of like, is that kind of something that you build something off of, or not really? Or is it, do you see what I'm saying with that? Because like the idea is you play on a neutral stage first, right? Like you play on a neutral stage where both players are supposed to have, according to both of them, based on the striking and how everything went, a fair advantage against each other. So the quote unquote, the better player wins in the first match. Right. So theoretically, would it be that stage striking and stage bans and everything should be based on getting that player to like, ultimately, I don't know. It feels like maybe I'm going too deep down the rabbit hole here, but do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Let me bring it in and let me organize it a little bit. So one, I want to preface this by saying that I'm going to step away. I'm saying my opinion, not the panel's opinion right now.
Good distinction.
So there's a separation there. So what you're starting to get into is skill expression and how important it is to determine results. In my opinion, a tournament, the whole point of a tournament, the single purpose of a tournament is to decide who is better at that point in time. Who is the best player at that point in time? And you can do, it really goes into a DSR discussion where if you had a tournament played solely on Final Destination, that is the only skill that is being represented, right? At the end of the day, if FD is the only legal stage and Kazuya player, like a Kazuya player comes out on top, have we, to our best of our ability, determined that that is the best player that day right then? Or if we had more stages available, more ways to represent player skill, would we represent another player as the best player in the room that day right then?
Right.
And so you have this idea of, is playing on more stages more beneficial and more accurate to determining who's the best player? And that is the whole concept behind DSR. Is, do you think that's irrelevant? Ah, that doesn't really matter. Like, playing on different stages and skill expression to that extent isn't as important. Or I feel like, you know, having different stages really doesn't matter. And that's kind of where that whole thing starts with. So to answer your question, I do think that there is validity within reason of playing on a bunch of different stages, game one, playing on the most neutral stages, and then within reason, you know, playing on different stages, you know, whatever the player's choices are to represent who has the most skill and who's representing that skill by the end of the set. That was a really long-winded answer, and I hope that I was kind of getting at what you're asking.
Yes, I think it was a good answer because I think it was shorter than the question. I tried to butcher together on the fly, so that was good. I appreciate you understanding where I'm coming from. Because I think that's so important, right? Like, why do we have stage bans and why do we have stage picks? What are we trying to accomplish here? And I agree with you. It's to determine who is, based on a unified set of rules, who is the better player on that day, right?
I just, in like longer sets, like best of fives, if you're playing a very good character, very rarely does it feel like stages will impact the outcome of the set. Assuming you're banning and like not running it back over and over and like, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like if like the character matchup is bad on one stage, it's probably bad on multiple stages. And giving your opponent an opportunity to counterpick a stage once or twice probably won't change. Like, if you win on game one, probably won't make it so you lose the entire set. I don't feel like that a lot of times when I'm playing. And when I'm watching, it usually doesn't feel like stages are that impactful to the outcome of the set. Assuming you are properly banning, it feels like the matchups are bad and there's not a lot of stages that's really going to change that. I don't know. Like, when I watch Gavin, I mean, maybe Gavin feels differently because he plays a lot more and he plays against matchups where it's like kind of even on this stage. Diddy wins on this stage. Diddy loses on that stage. And I think Diddy's a great example because he has a lot of flexibility in his stages and the way that he can play out the matchups on said stages. So maybe Gavin has input on that. I don't know. It doesn't feel super impactful, but maybe.
The main thing I was thinking of adding, and I don't know how helpful this is to the conversation, but like, let's say I'm playing like a best of five sets in a tournament. So I'm going to assume game one is going to be PS2 or Small Battlefield or something like that. If I win on that, it's like cool. And then the question is, are they going to run it back or are they trying to go to like a stage that's going to benefit the matchup or their character strengths? Cause it's pretty hard, I think, against Diddy to pick a stage where it's like, yeah, Diddy's like weaknesses are way more glaring here. Cause he's just a well-rounded character. So, and then, you know, I will say a lot of the time I'm pretty weird and I let them go wherever they want. Dak was already laughing at this.
I've chewed Tweak out so many times. Dude, why are you going here? Just it's funny to hear.
Man has data, Gavin. Listen to him.
So I just, but let's say in this specific set, I'm tryharding pretty hard, and I'm banning what I think their strengths are, but they still have an open stage to them that will benefit them in the matchup. So let's say the game two, we can just say that this character has a bigger advantage than they did in the first game. If I win on that stage, I'm feeling really good because it felt like that was their, like, I lost game one. Here's my trump card. Trump card doesn't work. And then, like, regardless of best of three or best of five, I'm feeling good. Like, I just have so much to work with now that I can even win on when they're in an advantage, whether it's big or small. And probably not too relevant to what you're saying, but that's just what I was thinking about, like my tournament experiences when I'm playing. And another similar feeling is if they run it back to that same neutral stage, whether it's PS2 or small battlefield usually, and I win again, then it's like, okay, now they have to dedicate the next stage to what they perceive as an advantage against me or my character or something like that. So I think the most important thing when you're playing in tournament is to not only win when it's neutral, but if you can win when they when they use their trump card, then they have nothing else. You know what I mean? And that's usually my goal is to, and I think sometimes that's why I try to have the mental advantage of letting them go wherever they want. Because if I show them that even in a perfect world that they're not going to win the game, then what are they going to do?
It makes you think about how crazy 3-0s are, right? If everyone, like how advantageous a really good stage could be in a specific matchup too. So it's pretty cool. Dang.
Yeah. So kind of in the same vein, because you guys are like broaching a lot of hot topics that I have to be careful because we would go on for like 4 hours. But on the last thing I'll say specifically about like the stage selection in terms of like bands and where we're going and like stage variety, when it comes back to DSR, that was one of the places I was going to go when we were talking about like the most interesting data sets that we got back was about DSR. And for you guys who don't know what DSR is, or listeners or whatever, DSR is just a super old like term to saying you can't go back to the last stage you won on. And it basically prevents a scenario of somebody going, you know, battlefield, 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 battlefield for a whole set. And it forces that stage expression and skill variety, whatever. So there's DSR, there's modified DSR, which is just you can't go back to the last stage you won on, which means that if you've won on battlefield, if it's been a few games, you can go back to battlefield. And then there's just no DSR where if you didn't ban it, you can go there. And that's pretty much your three options. So DSR was split perfectly even between those three options. It was the most divided out of all of the votes. And it's cool because we had at the very end, we had like a, what region are you from? And you could just trace, oh, you voted for no DSR. I see you're in this region. Your local rule set. Cool. Yeah. I see exactly, you know, what this is. So we could trace you back to like your region. And then the other question we asked was, you know, is playing on multiple stages throughout a set, does that have inherent value? And then that one was like 80% of people saw that there was inherent value of playing on multiple sets or multiple stages through a set. So it's this really weird dynamic. It was one of the weirdest pieces of data out of all. And that's how we got to MDSR, by the way, is because most people, 80%, wanted some type of DSR in effect. Nobody knew exactly what they wanted. So it was a really, really weird part. So we picked the middle ground out of all of it.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, this is a really great conversation, Dak. I just want to say thanks to you and the entire team for putting together all the data, and, you know, not sure how it's going to go, but it's something that the community, I think since the onset of the conversation, we said it's something the community has asked for forever and has really wanted, and then we'll obviously fight against the second it's presented, as we've seen a million times in the past. But y'all did really, really good work on this, and thanks, obviously, for putting it together and seeing what the data is. Super interesting to see it happen, and just kind of like the conversation about like culture and personal feelings about something versus the actual numbers and how that looks like. It's just, it's super interesting, especially when you know, apply it to something that we all care about very much in Smash. So just want to say thanks for the effort. I know this stuff isn't easy, and it's not easy when you put it out there and, you know, Twitter be Twittering, you know?
Yeah, I can tell like who read any of the data that we put out there and all that. That's always it's always fun to put like data analytics to children's party games. I think I think I'll be leaving that off of my resume, but it was fun regardless.
Cool. Well, thanks so much to you and the team again. It was awesome. Yeah. Really fun episode. It's great to talk about Smash for an extended period of time for sure and get us thinking about it a little bit. So any final thoughts, Gavin?
Yeah, once again, thank you to Dakpo for being on the show. One of my favorite people to talk to about Smash, regardless if it's because we both play Diddy. But yeah, thank you so much for watching as always. The Direct was really exciting. We're in the Smash 6 speculation period. I've always wanted Smash to feel more unified in its competition and rules. So any look in that direction is a thumbs up from me. And yeah, thank you so much for watching as always. Have a good one.